This is Science Friday. I'm Ira Flatow. A little bit later, how your habits and behavior might influence the behavior of your pets, and how cholesterol-lowering statin drugs were discovered in fungus. But first, how many plastic bottles do you throw out in a week? 3, maybe 4? According to the Environmental Protection Agency, Americans generated 32 million tons of plastic waste in 2012. Lots of that gets tossed into the landfill, but sometimes it can find its way into the ocean. In a study out this week, researchers say that in 2010, an estimated 5 to 13 million metric tons of plastic flowed into the world's oceans, and that's just in 1 year alone. The results of the study were published this week in the journal Science. Will we be swimming in a sea of plastic in the future? Let me introduce my guest. Kara Lavender Law is a co-author of that study. She's also a research professor of oceanography at the Sea Education Association in Woods Hole, Massachusetts. Welcome to Science Friday.
Thanks very much.
There was an estimate put out in 2014 based on the amount of plastic floating in the ocean. How does your study compare to that estimate?
Well, we are looking at sort of the other side of the equation. So rather than looking at ocean measurements to estimate how much plastic is out there already, we're looking at the amount of plastic that's entering the ocean from waste that was generated on land. So basically, we're looking at what's coming out of the faucet rather than what's already in the bathtub. And we're finding a huge discrepancy. The amount that we estimate is 20 to 2,000 times larger coming from land than what's already out there floating.
Wow. And so where does it go?
Well, that's one of the big research questions that we're starting to address. We know that not all plastic floats, so certainly some of this trash that enters the ocean sinks right down to the seafloor, and there have been people that look at this on continental shelves and more recently looking in the deep sea. And we also know, for all of us who've gone to the beach, that plastic trash is abundant there, everything from little bits of microplastics smaller than your fingernail all the way up to giant docks washing ashore from the Japanese tsunami and everything in between. But the most abundant form on beaches is, of course, things that we use every day, things like cigarette filters and bottle caps and food packaging.
So, you know, when I throw something out, I throw it into the garbage. And I assume that it gets to a landfill or something. So what's happening in that stream that's sending it out into the ocean?
Yeah, well, that depends on where you are in the world. So our study was at global estimates. So what we did was looked at waste generation and what happens to that waste in 192 countries around the world that have a coastline. And what we found was that the biggest contributors were actually countries that have growing economies, these developing countries where their waste generation rates are increasing very quickly, but they don't have the capacity to deal with that waste. So in that case, this is an infrastructure problem. But the second class of contributors are people like us in the United States and in the high-income countries, where we have very high waste generation rates. So the amount of trash that you and I produce each day is much higher than in most countries around the world. In the U.S., we also have a really large coastal population. So if you take that and think about the small amount, the small percentage of waste that somehow escapes the garbage can or the garbage truck and enters the ocean, because we have such a huge generation, this actually translates to a large number.
So we're talking then a problem of really waste management, of how to manage the waste we throw out.
It is. It's waste generation and waste management. Mm-hmm. So that you can solve the problem in two different ways. I think the immediate solution is, yes, it's waste management. We need to build infrastructure in countries that are lacking right now to capture the waste. We simply want to prevent it from entering the ocean. But in places where we have that infrastructure already, we want to reduce the amount of waste that we create. That's at least one aspect of the solution.
What about sources that originate in the sea? Is there plastic falling off of ships, things like that?
Yeah, so that's a really important point. What our study looked at simply was waste generated on land. So we didn't even account for things like lost fishing gear or lost aquaculture gear. We didn't think about the containers of Nikes or rubber ducks that fall off ships. And we didn't think about we didn't consider the material that comes into the ocean from natural disasters like hurricanes or floods or tsunamis. So really, this is a minimum estimate.
So and if you took the whole picture together, is there a better estimate that you could come
up
with?
Not yet. That's the next phase of our work, is to look at those additional sources. Although our suspicion is that the waste from land is probably the biggest number. But it does matter where this waste is coming from when you want to think about designing solutions. And there are people actively already thinking about, you know, how do we prevent or capture lost fishing gear, for example?
Yeah. What about, is there a difference between the giant pieces, you know, that come from the bottles and the trash bags like that, to the waste that we've heard about, like little microparticles in the ocean?
Yeah, so this is sort of points to one gap in our understanding is how long it takes for those big items, once they enter the ocean, to turn into those little microplastics that are smaller than your fingernail. We don't have a good sense of that time scale. There's another class of materials that start out that small, things like microbeads that are in cosmetic products or personal care products, or scrubbers that are used in industrial purposes. So the sources come in all sizes, from almost microscopic all the way up to, you know, huge debris coming off from a natural disaster. And the impacts of those different items vary based on the animal that encounters them.
So there must be, since we have nanoparticles just about everywhere now, I imagine there must be lots of nanoparticles in that debris also.
So. That's what we suspect. You know, we don't have a good sense of how small plastic breaks down in the ocean. If you talk to the polymer scientists, they'll tell you that it'll just get turned into smaller and smaller pieces down to nanoparticles, and it'll still remain a plastic polymer. But we don't have a good sense of how many of those nanoparticles are out there. We don't have a good way to measure them just yet.
Mm-hmm. So the nanoparticles, do we know how they interact with the wildlife that's living, breathing, eating in the ocean?
Yeah, we do. For the microplastics, which are, you know, typically a millimeter, a couple millimeters in size, or maybe even smaller, we know that these are easily eaten by a wide variety of marine animals, ranging from invertebrate marine worms or barnacles up to seabirds and sea lions and even whales. And when an animal eats a small bit of plastic, we have a number of concerns. First, there could be, depending on the size of plastic, there could be internal damage, but also just a false sense of feeling full. We know there's no nutritional value in plastic. But I think the area where there's the most concern right now is in the toxins that might be associated with these plastics. So we know that when plastics are manufactured, a variety of additives are included to give them certain properties, flexibility or flame retardants or color. Mm-hmm. And some of these additives are known toxins. Secondly, we know that plastics, when they're drifting in the ocean, act as little sponges, and they accumulate other persistent toxins that have been in the ocean for decades, things like PCBs and DDT. So we're concerned that when animals eat these little bits of plastic, those toxins might transfer into their tissues and potentially up the food web. And in laboratory work, this has been shown to occur. But right now, we're not entirely clear on the risk in the actual ocean.
Well, Professor, thank you for taking time to be with us today. Fascinating.
Thanks very much.
Carol Lavender Law is a research professor of oceanography at Sea Education Association in Woods Hole, Massachusetts.